Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to day two of the World Cup Minute. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Fantastic. They told me it was going to be like this, Josh. It was going to be highly emotional. The U.S. is back in the World Cup. You know, that we're back.
Yes.
It's been eight years in the making. And I guess I was prepared with the U.S. coming back for it to be anticlimactic, but boy, howdy, that was climactic, and that was World Cup.
It was.
To be reactionary, this is sort of a, I wish Chris Hardwick were here. It's like, this is like Talking Dead or something like that.
Yeah.
Us coming from the bar, having watched the U.S.-Wales match, it feels very World Cup-y, where we had moments of highs and lows, right?
Yeah, it was doubly disappointing because we were up, we lost in the we didn't lose. It felt like a loss. We conceded a goal in the 80th minute, and then you and I were schooled by a couple of Englishmen in pool shortly thereafter, which felt like a double loss, Brendan. I think we needed a heroic win in pool to really save the day, and sadly, that was not forthcoming. So, we are double losers today. But we're professionals. We're going to come at you and give you a little recap of what happened today and a look ahead to what happened tomorrow. So, Brendan, before we get to the U.S. Wales match, let's kick things off with England 6, Iran 2, an 8-goal. I guess I wouldn't call it a thriller exactly, but I thought the first half was extremely dominant by England. I was really impressed with a couple of the goals. I think Bellingham's opening goal was terrific. Saka's, would you call that a volley? It was kind of a volley, right? It was sort of a,
sure.
I don't think it touched the ground at any point, right? He sort of got the ball and knocked
it.
Fine,
he scored
a
goal. We don't have to like classify it like this is a museum of goals here, Josh. It was like Saka scored a goal and it was great.
Saka scored a goal. Yeah.
I love the, it was the revenge of the Euro Cup. Pen takers.
It's
sad that Sancho wasn't there to join into the party, but
yeah, it's true.
With Rashford and Saka both doing the business against Iran.
He went to Man United. That was his choice, Brandon.
You know, sure.
With all that comes
paid.
With that.
The man got paid, and that's all well and good, but it's true. I thought Saka was brilliant today. England was fantastic. And then it plays into the conversation that we're having yesterday about Ecuador versus Qatar. Like, who was the story that Qatar was really bad, or was the story that Ecuador was that good? And that plays into Iran versus England. And I think this is, I'm curious to see over the next few days, does this bear out to be true? Is the thread going to be through the first week of the World Cup? Good teams are really good, and bad teams just tend to be bad, or mediocre teams, or whatever. It's going to be the stark contrast, because you know, we thought as followers of club football in Europe, particularly the Premier League, you know, it's a gripe that you interrupted the club season to bring these top players to Qatar to play the World Cup. Well, it turns out if you bring these great players to Qatar in the middle of the season, they're less tired, they're less fatigued than they would be after a full 38-game week season. And what we saw from England today against Iran, I think, was evidence of like, wow, these top players are great and they look not fatigued. It doesn't matter. They've not played that much together. And I'm a little afraid of England at the moment, thinking that we're going to, as Americans, we're going to face them on Friday, right?
That's a good point. I mean, we sort of thought of this as like an unprecedented tournament, right? Nothing like this ever happened before. But of course, the African Cup of Nations frequently comes, I think it's every 3 years. I don't believe it's every 4 years. It occurs in January typically. And that typically pulls away the best African players. For example, last year we had Sadio Mane and Mo Salah basically go in the middle of the club seasons, right? And join... Egypt and Senegal, and those teams made the finals, right? Those were kind of the same situation, right? We had two kind of players in the middle of their club seasons joining these two countries. So yeah, that's a good point. And I think you sort of talked about the good teams being good, the bad teams being bad. I mean, I think the U.S. Wales game was an example of what happens when you have two kind of B plus squads meet each other, right? Which is that you get a 1-1 draw. I got salty on Twitter. Because I was being a poor sport, but I suppose this is my style. But with the benefit of hindsight, I will acknowledge that I thought we were certainly in control in the first half of that match. I felt like we let our sort of foot off the gas in the second half, but I will also acknowledge that Wales was probably a little more dominant in the second half. I don't know if I call it a straight up tale of two halves, Brandon, but I feel like certainly Wales were a lot better. Daniel James going off really made a huge difference for Wales, and they were pressuring Matt Turner a lot more than they had in the first half. I mean, the first half there was basically was there a single shot on goal in the first half for Wales? I'm not sure there was.
The U.S. basically held the ball for 100% of the time in the first half, and I think our hoarse voices sort of tell the tale a little bit here. But it's an interesting phenomenon, like beyond the World Cup, of like, why is it that a team that can be so dominant in the first half can then have to deal with a whole different set of circumstances in the second half? Obviously, management has their say. You come into the locker room, you rejigger the tactics and all that, you adjust to what you see in the first half. But the U.S. was so dominant against Wales. And our complaint or our fear about the U.S. coming into the World Cup was Greg Berhalter and the U.S. management. And are they really tough enough? Are they really tactically acute enough? And I feel like during the first half of U.S. Wales, I was like, oh, I wholly underestimated Berhalter and this U.S. squad. Right. They are dominating. And then the second half, you feel like, what is it in a tournament like this that you have to, what does it take to keep whatever pressure you have from the first half going into the second half? And I almost feel guilty complaining about it, because what the result was probably the first great match of the World Cup. England came in early in the day two and scored a lot of beautiful goals, and it was a wonderful sort of coming out party for Goldfest World Cup. Netherlands Senegal was a good tactical match, but I don't know, maybe it was because I was so emotionally invested in Wales US, but I felt like that one was a down and dirty street ball sort of a match through various phases. And I am so absolutely disgusted that the U.S. ended with a point there, but I am also so emphatically like rejuvenated and full of World Cup adrenaline having watched the U.S. Wales, because I think if you're new to the tournament, you're new to football, that was the match. It was just particularly the second half, it was just like blow for blow, Rocky match sort of a thing. I just can't believe that we couldn't pull it through. You must be so disappointed too, right, Josh?
Well, certainly I felt it in real time. And I think, if I can take off my U.S. goggles for a second, it's a good reminder that the stakes were pretty high for Wales as well, right? I think it was their first tournament. I think it was 1958 was the last time that they had played in a World Cup.
Come on, like Michael Sheen, like the amount of viral internet that Michael Sheen has sucked up. I felt so good that the U.S. was sort of like, all right, Wales, you're just like anybody else. There's nothing special about being from farmland. that makes you like an interesting World Cup nation.
I was born in rural Michigan. Okay, I was born in the same kind of farmland. Right. But I think Bale did. We were talking after the match, and you know, you and I watched this one in person, which we often don't get a chance to do anymore. And we were talking later about whether Bale had a good match or not. But ultimately, Bale did what a savvy veteran does, right? Which is he found a moment to win a pen, and he took it. And you know, you can say whether that match deserved a pen or not doesn't really matter, right? Because that's what this is what Kevin De Bruyne did in a Premier League match just 3 weeks ago, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. You know, a really smart player is going to find
U.S. connection. Anthony Robinson dove in on De Bruyne and gave the penalty for that. And I think this as U.S. fans. And it's sort of a writ large across any nation. Like, where are you drawing your pool of national team players from? Yeah. I think this match should be the death knell for Major League Soccer players, because the U.S. looked so cogent, competent. We looked good. Like, I cannot believe I am here. Yeah. Like, I'm so happy to be here saying the U.S. looked so cogent at this international level. Save the Major League Soccer players. And Zimmerman in center back is a joke. Like, I'm sorry. I'm going to let you talk.
You didn't think that Jordan Morris changed the game, Brandon, when he came on in the 80th
minute? I'm going to let you finish here, Josh, but I have to get on my soapbox. I am so disgusted at how many people hated on Tim Ream coming into this World Cup. Everyone was like, oh, why did Ream get called up to the squad? Yeah, Miles Robinson had an injury, et cetera, et cetera. But Ream looked so good against Wales. He was competent. He was he was as much as he could controlling. And then Zimmerman, who would have been the preferred center back pairing with Miles Robinson, who was injured, blew it. And he went in like the most insanely rash challenge and blew the 3 points for the U.S. So I just want to say, particularly when you're talking about a team like Wales, who had a lot of like sort of like quote unquote over the hill veterans with Bale and Ramsey and players like that who deserve plaudits for their careers. Tim Ream came in and did a job for the U.S. And I think that the stakes are so high in matches that are this tight. Wales, U.S., like it was like it's such a romantic game. Like the stakes were properly high. And Zimmerman was not there to play to them, I think.
Well, let's give credit to Pulisic for a brilliant pass to Tim Weah. Tim Weah, also an extremely good finish. I'm not sure if it was one. I think it was one touch. If he took another touch, it was very, very fast and really nice side footed shot. About as perfect as a goal gets. Honestly, it was just a beautiful goal. It was so nice that I almost couldn't believe it went in when it happened in real time. You know, it was everything was so snap fast. It was like the kind of goal you'd seen in club football. Honestly, it was a really nice goal to see international. So let's. That's the U.S. We could go on about that, but there were other matches today as well. I think with England, it was just a very dominant performance. I feel like what I saw from that match was a feeling that England actually, and you and I aren't necessarily on the same page about this, but I feel like that was a World Cup. I was feeling more confident than you were going to this kind of tournament that England could win the World Cup. And coming out of that match, I felt even better, because the squad is just so stable, right? Over multiple cups now, that squad has stayed remarkably stable. It's the same squad, effectively, you know, with the addition of Jude Bellingham that went into the, you know, World Cup 2018, that went into Euro 2020, which of course was played last year because of COVID. So, you know, there's a lot of stability within that squad, and I felt like that really came through in today's match. It just felt like a team that really knew how to play together.
The scary thing about England, like if you're opposing England, is I agree with you, totally stable, but the changes that Southgate made were so seamless. Kieran Trippier coming in at right back for Kyle Walker makes the team better. Jude Bellingham, as you shouted him out, Josh, coming in for Calvin Phillips makes the team better. So for all those England fans or England haters who say England were lucky to get to the semifinal of the World Cup or the final of the Euro, Yeah. Man, yeah, they're here to sound off again. Now they've played a weaker opposition in Iran, and I'm curious to see what they look about when they play a tougher opposition. But based on what we saw against Iran, we're like, holy crap, this is the best team we have seen so far through 2 days.
Undoubtedly, although I did think Ecuador looked better yesterday than you did to a degree. And then the Netherlands Senegal match was sort of it's kind of interesting, right? We didn't have Sadio Mane for Senegal, unfortunately, he's out for the tournament, and then Memphis Depay as well wasn't quite at full fitness, and so he came in as a sub around the 60th minute. I thought that it was a pretty, honestly, it was a fairly even match. You know, 2-0 is the final scoreline, but that includes a very late goal scored by Netherlands right near the end. And then our boy, Gakpo, right at the end there, Brandon. Cody Gakpo.
Todd, scores, son of Todd Gak.
Son of Todd Gak. He scores a really nice goal. One of those goals that it's like, It was just a very aesthetically pleasing goal because it was a backwards header, right? The ball sort of comes in and he just sort of heads it behind him, and he and the keeper, no one even kind of knows where that ball is going to go, right? It just sort of goes goalward, and ultimately that was the difference in that match. And then I think otherwise it was kind of a cagey match. I mean, neither squad was quite at full strength, and I'm not sure that I have any great conclusions that I would draw from Senegal Netherlands other than Netherlands were just that little bit better, which we kind of expected.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I think, the Senegal-Netherlands match was one for the diehards and the academics, and that's one that, you know, if you're new to the World Cup, go back and sort of think about that match a bit, because those teams were so evenly matched, and the sour note on day two was that Sadio Mane being absent from Netherlands. I feel like that scoreline flattered Netherlands a bit. I thought Senegal looked really good, and if they had a fit Sadio Mane, third place for the Ballon d'Or.
Even Cody Gakpo.
even against Gakpo. I mean, Mane would have had his say for sure. And I, the heart weeps a little bit for what could have been for Senegal in this tournament. But I think that they're broken a little bit, not having their talisman. And what I was kind of waiting for with this match was are either of these teams going to shout out dark horse? And I think my takeaway is don't worry about Netherlands. Don't worry about Senegal. They'll one or both may break into the round of 16, but based on today's evidence, I don't think this is a team that you have to watch out for in terms of a bracket buster.
No, I'm kind of with you there. I mean, I think of all the squads we've seen so far through, I guess, we've seen eight of 32 teams play so far, and I think England's the only one that you look at and think, okay, this team could possibly win the World Cup. So just before we look at tomorrow's matches, Brandon, as a resident kit man over here, were there any kits that shone for you today in the World Cup? Or are there any that you really thought? I know you're not a fan of the U.S. kit. I'm sort of with you there. I think
sure. We don't need to go over that territory.
Go over it again. Yeah.
Yeah, in a World Cup like this, where we're in a dark age of kits, of uniforms, the simple and the traditional stand out, and the Netherlands with their bright orange classic total football kit, just perfect, no notes. It has to be that. Senegal's kit, I thought, was relatively uninteresting. U.S. bad, England bad. Here's what I have to say. If you're a nation that can field a kit that is all the same color, like when England play in all white, white top, white shorts, white socks, beautiful. Yeah. And the U.S. has done that before. And I think if you can do it head to toe, that's great. And I think Holland with their orange, perfect. Yeah. So kits today, the message is about simplicity, folks.
I think I'm with you there. Like when Algeria, for example, plays in like an all green kit, you know, I think that's very aesthetically pleasing. I really enjoy that. So sadly, Algeria not there with us today, Brandon. But I think they had a friendly yesterday. I think they played. I think our friend Riyad Mahrez played 90 minutes yesterday.
Beautiful.
So if you need a little green in your life, go watch some highlights from from that match. All right, let's look ahead to tomorrow's games. We have our first four-day slate, Brandon. We only have three today because they pulled up that Qatar match and played it on Sunday instead of Monday. So tomorrow we're back to a more normal schedule. Again, these are English. These are Eastern Standard Times, Brandon. So we have a 5 a.m. match tomorrow. Are you getting up for this one? Are you getting up for Argentina, Saudi Arabia at 5 a.m., Brandon?
That's a negative, you know. So, you know, depending on the time zone sort of thing, you've got to like play your chips when you can. And you and I, we have full-time day jobs. And, you know, today was one for me. We took the day off. We watched the U.S. It was a blast. It was fun. Tuesday has got to be a day for the man. So I'll give this one to the man.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So that's where I'm at. What about you? I mean, you'll sort of like, how early will you dive into Temptation and get up at 6 a.m.?
I'm flying to Qatar after this recording to go watch that in person.
Nice. Okay.
So we have Argentina, Saudi Arabia as the early match. Denmark, Tunisia play after that. Mexico, Poland, which again I think is kind of the match of the day. That's the one I'm most excited about. And then France, Australia play in the evening match. That is to say, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's as late as any of these matches are going to be played here in our Eastern time zone. I think that the France match is the one that I am maybe the most interested in because I want to see what that French team looks like without Benzema. Now, Benzema has not necessarily been a huge part of France's national team for many years because of his sexual blackmail situation, Brett. And that's not anything you and I like to bring up on this podcast. Yeah. That's not what we're about. It has to be done, though. This is just a fact.
This is underlying hardcore journalism right here.
Yeah, exactly. But he has been certainly involved in the last couple of years with France. And so now that unfortunately he's out for the tournament, I'm curious. I mean, this is a team that is not exactly wanting for absolutely brilliant players. But regardless, I think that they did lose their talismanic forward on the eve of the World Cup. And I'm curious what kind of impact that has on their squad. I'll put an Australia team that maybe isn't as solid as some of the vintage Australia teams of our past, Brandon. I mean, you and I are both Matt Ryan heads, you know, big fans of Australia's goalkeeper. But I'd say in general, this is not a team that there's no Tim Cahill coming to that party, Brandon.
No, that's a negative. I mean, even if they had there must be a movie with a kangaroo with boxing gloves. Like, even if Australia going to have a sort of like joke
nice
kangaroo
like
sort of a player, that would be better than whatever they've got going on. All respect to our Australian listeners, of whom there are many, and we love them. But I think Mexico Poland jumps out to me. In Mexico, we are like, for the uninitiated, if you follow college basketball in the United States, Mexico is Tom Izzo's Michigan State. This team is a tournament team. They often show like few bright spots in qualification, but they eke it out. And then when it comes tournament time, Mexico turn it on. There is always a story to tell about Mexico when it gets to the tournament. So I really want to see what kind of flair Mexico bring. And they're going up against Lewandowski, the Polish number nine, who is one of the best strikers historically over the last decade around the world.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be, I think, a masterclass between Mexico and Poland. I want to see that match.
I'm excited about that match, too. You know, Raul Jimenez was called up for the Mexican team. I would say that Raul Jimenez is one of my... I honestly go so far as to call him one of my all-time favorite forwards in the Premier League. I mean, I absolutely love watching him play. And he's obviously had this tragic head injury, which seems to have ultimately kind of derailed his career, I'm sorry to say. It looks like he really hasn't been the same for Mexico since then. But he was called up, and this team is full of, there's a handful of players that were involved in MLS, right? So they have kind of a full season under their belt. Like you said, it's just kind of a unique situation where you just have a lot of players who they're just, you know, they're actively playing for their club squads.
Did you not hear my call out, Josh, about banning Major League Soccer from the World Cup? Zimmerman is the death knell in Major League Soccer. You're banned. You're out.
Done. Looking now, I thought there'd be more. It's Hector Herrera is the only MLS player who was called up for this Mexican team. So I think the situation with Poland is interesting. I mean, obviously you have it's honestly a reasonably balanced squad. I mean, you can say it's Robert Lewandowski, who is arguably a top five player in the world, and then a bunch of kind of mediocre players. But I mean, you have a bunch of very solid players in that squad, including a couple of Aston Villa players, Brandon. I mean, you have
Matty Cash.
Polish legend.
We got called out on our Premier League podcast about imagining a conversation between Emi Martinez and Matty Cash and not realizing that Matty Cash, if you were amongst the Blitz in Warsaw and you came across a guy named Matty Cash, you really wouldn't know where to put him in the hierarchy at that point in World War II. I don't think you would.
Matty Cash to me only sounds Polish, Brendan. I can't imagine it being any other nationality. So very interesting.
Kaszowski, I think, is his family name. But I think it's true. Like they're Poland is probably overshadowed by how big of a shadow that mixing my shadow references there. That Lewandowski cast, that they have some good players too. And Mexico will not be favored to win this match or even get out of their group, which kind of makes me root for them a little bit more.
Yeah, they're sort of in that second, third place territory. I'd say they're, you know, honestly, this match with Poland tomorrow is huge, I think, for both of them. I think whoever wins that match assuming one team does win that match, will have a serious leg up going into the next two matches in the tournament. And I think that Mexico's World Cup history is kind of interesting. I mean, they're a country that actually did host the World Cup back in 78, and they're but for a country that has a number of brilliant players and a long history of playing in the World Cup, they don't have a great World Cup history. They've never advanced past the quarterfinals of the World Cup. So if they were able to put together a really great run, semifinals or even quarterfinals, I think that that would be great, because this is a squad that has been together. It's a little bit like England, honestly, but maybe not with quite as much. They haven't quite ascended as high, but this is a squad that won the Olympics many years ago. I don't remember this, Brent, about 10 years ago. When England hosted the Olympics, that Mexico team, featuring many of the same players who were on this national team, won the World Cup over Brazil. So there's a lot of talent in this squad, and I'm really curious to see how it all shakes out tomorrow. So I think that match is really fun. I think that Denmark-Tunisia is probably kind of underrated match in terms of what it maybe means long term as well, because Denmark is sort of emerging as this kind of dark horse club. You know, shout out to producer Louise Brandon, one of our Danish friends. You know, I'm really excited to see what we get out of Denmark. I like a lot of the players in this squad. I would love to see Denmark do well. Huge fan of Christian Eriksen. Obviously, the narrative of Eriksen is incredible, and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg is just a wonderful spitfire.
I love you moving from Christian Eriksen, who almost died of heart failure, to just
fire and ice, Brandon. You got the whole mix in there. Yeah.
That's fair. I'm hip to the whole Denmark thing. I do think that I don't know. It's almost like rooting for a cool indie band to win the Grammy Award or something like that. And that's like, that's not quite right. I'm not quite hitting the nail on the head there.
It's always fun to have a hipster favorite in the mix. And, you know, Tunisia's honestly, I wouldn't put them quite in that category either, but Tunisia has a really solid team. I think they're a team that I have to kind of go in with open eyes, because there aren't a lot of players that most of us watching the World Cup will have. Even you and I, who do a weekly soccer/football podcast, don't have a ton of familiarity with the players in this Tunisia squad. But they are you know, it's a solid team full of pros, Brandon. This is not like a Qatar situation. Yeah. So, you know, I think the really, you know, so I'm really curious, you know, we'll know a lot more about both squads, after tomorrow. And then Argentina, Australia, which we sort of, or excuse me, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, which we sort of skipped over. I just expect Argentina to really roll, over Saudi mm-hmm. Arabia in tomorrow's match. And it's possible by the time you're listening to this podcast, that match has already been played. So maybe I'll look foolish when Saudi Arabia, you know, stomps Argentina 4-0.
Not likely, but Josh. Have confidence.
Not likely. Yeah. But I'm really, you know, this Argentina team, I think, is one of the easier Argentina teams to root for. In some case, in some ways, the stakes are a little bit lower for them. There's a lot of pressure when Messi was in his prime. Now he's sort of past his prime. But the squad finally sort of got a little bit of a kind of over the hump last year when they finally won a Copa America. And Emi Martinez was really a big part of that. And so I don't know how much a talismanic goalkeeper really matters. It certainly doesn't in like the National Hockey League. I don't know if that still matters in, you know, the World Cup or not.
It doesn't hurt.
Lev Yashin here, but yeah, it doesn't hurt exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt. And I'll be rooting for Argentina. Part of me is, I am really invested in the anti-Cristiano Ronaldo, like come at me haters, I guess, but anti-Cristiano Ronaldo narrative. And it would be like amazing if Argentina wins the World Cup and they completely erase CR7's legacy from the pages, like as a photograph and Back to the Future
really
or something
end.
Like that.
Yeah. It's true, because they have a Euro and Messi's got a Copa America, right? So they're kind of roughly equal now in terms of their accomplishments.
Yeah. In a sense, and likability factor is definitely in play given Ronaldo's recent exploits. But this World Cup is shaking up to be like a miserable failure for the Middle East. Iran one-upped Qatar, and like how bad could a team be in this particular World Cup? And if Argentina gets trucked, to use your word, Josh, by Argentina, it's just going to be a disaster for the Middle Eastern states. And you know, so be it. But I'm kind of with Argentina on this one.
Yeah, I am too, and I'm really let's see what we get out of them tomorrow. I think they're certainly, I'd say, next to Brazil, the sort of the co-favorite or second favorite to win the World Cup. So let's see what we get out of them tomorrow. Really fun day, a lot of fun matches. If you're a neutral, we got the U.S. match out of the way, Brendan, so you and I can just enjoy all the other games that are on for the next couple of days. And let's see what we got. And with that, let's end today's World Cup Minute. Nice talking to everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow with more World Cup talk. Thank you.
Yeah, just a quick word, Josh, before we end. Like, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can get this podcast wherever you download podcasts, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. But chill out, hang out with us on YouTube. If that's your thing, subscribe, hit the like button and all that, and screw FIFA and Qatar for not letting people wear the armbands that they want to.
100%. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.